Welcome to the M&A Zing, the weekly podcast for acquisition entrepreneurs in the UK, Europe and beyond. This is a very special edition of the M&A Zing this week. We are live from the Serial Acquirer Symposium in Wimpole Street in Marylebone. I'm joined today by Robin Goldhagen, Assistant Vice President of Investor Relations at Novastone Capital Advisors. Robin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Alfie, for having me.
Before we dive into the Novastone model, which is super interesting, I'd love to know a little bit about you and your kind of role into investor relations and what the role entails.
Yeah, absolutely. My background is probably more similar to the one of a traditional searcher in the sense that I started out in investment banking, spent a couple of years in strategy consulting, mostly with UBS and the asset management and wealth management division, before then moving into a fintech, building up the investor relations department of a fintech company in the growth equity space in Switzerland.
Oh.
I've built out the team with the different functions that IR entails for this growth equity company, and was then in fact introduced to a searcher who was active with the Novastone program and Christian, the CEO and co-founder of NCA at the same time. So I sort of had entry points to NCA on the two very different sides of the coin.
Right. Yeah.
Which is very interesting, and I have had very interesting discussions with the founder and eventually decided to come on board in order to facilitate and really grow the investor relations, let's say, efforts on the European side of things.
Okay. And for those that aren't aware of the way that it works, what does the investor relations role entail for you?
Yeah, so investor relations, I mean, that's entails a whole lot of things. Yeah, there is a lot of educating, yeah, given that we are working in an asset class that is not familiar to many people.
Of course, yeah.
That is probably a large chunk of that. Yeah, educating, and then there's also a large element of storytelling.
Okay. Right?
What the program is about, what we're trying to do, mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's really more an art of a science. It's about creating connections for, in my case, the European searchers, mm-hmm. with the people, and that may be investors, that may also be other people that are somewhat relevant for their acquisition process, and connect them to the right people to spark a conversation.
Interesting. So you said that it's not an asset class that's very widely known. Is that something you would say is a big difference between perhaps sort of the US ETA market and what we have in Europe? And that's a big part of your job is educating and bringing investors on board. Speaking to family offices, I imagine, I know that Novastone deals with quite a few of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the North American market is a lot more mature. The search fund model is much more popular over there, mm-hmm. than it is over here. There are people that are, I mean, right now there's certainly strong momentum. So people are seeing that there's a lot of traction in the ETA and the search fund space. And people see that in terms of, LinkedIn activity, for instance. Yeah, white papers being published or people posting about their journey. Mm-hmm. That helps a great deal. But this is still like a white spot. I mean, the search fund space, the majority of investors that you would be speaking to will have not heard about the search fund as such. And I mean, if you speak to, say, veterans in the UK, for instance, they will then reference the Bimbo model in the 80s, a buy-in management buyout.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, which has some parallels, some similarities to the search fund model. But in general, outside the bubble, outside the search fund ecosystem, there is a lot of education still to be done about the model.
Mm.
And then, of course, it varies by geography also within Europe, right? So, for instance, in Spain, pretty much every single family office you will speak to in Spain will have funded a searcher at some point in time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this then, of course, Portugal, France, Italy, I mean, this moves on to other countries. But in the DACH region, for instance, it's still fairly unknown.
That's one thing that we've noticed, that it tends to be sort of more Southern Europe. Again, beginning in Spain, we're seeing a lot of activity in Italy at the moment, and it's sort of gradually moving north.
Yeah.
But obviously you're based in...
I'm in Zurich. I'm in Zurich. I mean, I should, in terms of our setup, so I'm essentially working with the European searchers.
Okay.
Constructing their cap table, connecting them to the right people. And we are active in 12 countries in Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's quite a diverse geographical base to work with, which also, means that for every single transaction, there is always a local bias, right? We're speaking about SMEs here.
Yeah.
And we can get to that in a bit about our, you know, investor base, which are essentially systematic investors that backing the program as such and investing, you know, in a number of search fund deals. But we also like to bring in local investors for every single transaction.
In a sort of one-to-one matchup, so matching the local search with the local investor?
I mean, yes. So there are certain, let's say, in Iberia, yeah, Spanish investors that have a preference for Spain and Portugal, you know, we'll be connecting with an investor with a searcher that is searching or acquiring a business in that space.
Okay.
And then the same goes for the French-speaking investors. You have the German-speaking investors. Sure. So these communities, they overlap, yeah, because there is... say serial search fund investors that have almost built an institutional approach to it and screen through dozens of PPMs that they receive from searches, and they would be investing in, let's say, almost globally.
Okay. Yeah?
They would even go into emerging markets. So they overlap in the different geographies, but then you also have people that are somewhat, let's say, new to the space that will focus on their home turf, let's say.
That was to be my next question. Do you find that it's the new investors that try to stay local at first until they kind of build confidence and get to know the space?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, many investors that start out by backing searches rather than going into an equity gap situation,
sure,
where they invest in an acquisition. And whenever you invest in a searcher, obviously there is a cultural component to assess whether somebody has, in your opinion, what it takes to be a successful searcher. And that tends to be easier for somebody that has a similar, let's say, educational or cultural background. And I think for people that want to get started and want to build a track record and want to get immersed and involved in the scene, they will naturally start with search budget investments.
Sure.
They will stay fairly close to their home ground.
And that kind of process of assessing a searcher rather than assessing the kind of asset class as a whole, it's something that investors are probably more used to from, you know, the startup funding model. It's all based on, you know, find a great founder rather than a great idea. So they're more comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think most of the time when you speak to investors, they will reference an experience that they had with somebody that had approached them,
okay,
and told them about essentially presented their PPM, what they were doing. And that is usually the first touch point with the model.
Okay.
Yeah. So essentially individuals approaching these investors, and that's when they, in the best case scenario, start digging a bit what's going on. You know, why do we get all these PPMs? Why do we get approached repeatedly by searchers?
Yeah.
And what's happening here? And I think that's a great thing in this space. You know, it's almost a bit like a grassroots movement that this is spreading out.
Awesome. And that's how it will grow. So we've touched briefly on searches. I mean, so Noberstone Capital Advisors, they have a fairly sort of unique model. For those that don't know, and I know many in the scene already do, could you kind of break down how that model works and how it differs from the traditional search fund?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we consider ourselves as an operator-led search fund model, yeah, which is essentially a partnered approach. Mm-hmm. The main difference of the NCA program is that we are focused on mid-career professionals. Yeah. In the traditional model, what you see, I mean, it's, if you go to the leading business schools, it's mostly MBA graduates that have 2, 3, 4, 5 years of experience in the typical industries, PE, IB, consulting. Mm-hmm. In our case, the approach is slightly different. We're going for a demographic that is, our average searcher is about 43 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. So they bring 15 to 20 years of operating experience. Now, they are not necessarily M&A professionals with a private equity background.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, first and foremost, very good, very capable operators.
Sure.
Now, oftentimes, they come across the search fund model through a time spent at, you know, doing an executive MBA, for instance. Now, then the risk profile of somebody like that has, you know, a high-paid corporate job, has a family, mortgage to pay, is slightly different from, let's say, the MBA that, you know, takes a gamble of raising a search fund.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, you could consider that the equivalent of starting a company maybe,
sure,
the last 2 decades. And so what we're doing, we're partnering with these individuals. Mm. Yeah, we are the largest program of this kind, so we receive around 4,000 applications every year.
Wow.
That is Europe and North America. They apply to the program, and then we have what we call our assessment center team that essentially evaluates all of these candidates. Now, this is a 3-month process with business cases, panel discussions, one-to-one interviews. And the end of that process, we typically onboard, let's say, 4 to 8 individuals per quarter that then get an offer to join the program.
Wow.
What does it mean to join the program? Joining the program means that we will fund your search budget, essentially. Yeah, this is one fundamental difference to the traditional search fund model where you raise your search budget in order to get started. In our case, we're saving, let's say, some time for these guys.
Sure.
In the sense that the day you are onboarded, you can get started right away and you will get funded by the program. Yeah. So there is sort of, a baseline salary that should cover the essentials, let's say. That depends a bit on where you live. In Hungary, it's going to be different than in New York, for instance.
Yeah.
And you will, for instance, be supported by an analyst. Yeah, we have a team in Israel that focuses on everything digital, yeah, all the databases, all the information.
Okay.
So that helps them a great deal. If you imagine, I mean, we've been in business since 2019, really, with the first searches starting probably in 2020. We've approached a lot of businesses since then, and we've spoken to a lot of brokers, a lot of service providers. So we're keeping track of that, and we have a global database to help our searchers navigate, you know, who has been approached already, who are, let's say, preferred vendor contacts. All of these things will make your life a lot easier and help you on what is most essential, and that is finding that needle in the haystack, is finding that perfect company for you.
Absolutely. So you said that you have this is our kind of area of expertise, it is sourcing. So yeah, I was going to ask about how your acquisition entrepreneurs find their companies. Do they do any proprietary search of their own on top of the database that you provide?
They will, yes. There is different routes that you can go down.
Yeah. Sure.
So there's old school ways of sending letters, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Then you have the obvious ones, emails, AI-generated emails, that type of stuff that you can do.
Uh-huh.
You will be attending industry conferences, right? You need to put yourself out there. But what we see is that the companies that we're looking at are heavily brokered, yeah, also in this segment of the market.
Okay.
Which is, in our opinion, a good thing.
Okay.
It's a good thing because brokers tend to manage the expectations of the seller. Yeah, we tend to, I mean, all of us have some sort of a bias when it comes to the things that we own, right? You would always value your own apartment, your own car is worth more than the exact same car if it's owned by somebody else. The same thing goes for a company, probably even more so if you spend 20, 30 years building it.
Right. Yeah.
You are a bit, you know, biased in the sense that you will look for the reports where you see the highest multiples, you know, think about comparable transactions that probably are nothing alike.
Sure.
And you come up with perhaps an irrational sense of what your company may be worth.
Yes.
And this is where the brokers then come in, that they are more sensible, they have a better understanding of the market, mm-hmm. and they tend to manage expectations with the sellers, which I think you need to be, there's always an element of negotiation to get to the final price.
Absolutely.
But you can't be too far apart. Yeah, there needs to be some sort of needs to be reasonable.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's something that we see quite a lot when we speak to sellers. And as you said, you know, to quote Arsene Wenger, everyone thinks they have the prettiest wife at home.
So
everybody will go and find out, you know, the highest multiple. And that's a business that has been preparing for, you know, exit for 3 years. Their books are all in order. You know, they haven't been doing anything clever to minimize profit, to minimize tax and that kind of thing. And yeah, everybody wants to go out of that, you know, 5x multiple, and maybe they're not quite ready for that. So that's interesting that you say that about brokers, because in the UK, I mean, I suppose it's the same anywhere. There are different kinds of brokers, and we tend to find that those in the kind of smaller boutique brokerages do what you say, and they kind of prep them better for sale. Mm-hmm. And some will perhaps give a slightly higher multiple to get the seller on board. Do you find that at all? Sort of different, maybe locations have different qualities of brokers?
Yeah, that is probably, I mean, I suppose the UK market is more professional and probably even more brokered than in other countries. Yeah, in other countries, what we often see is that they are the accountants or tax advisors that, you know, have sort of a brokerage arm or will advise them in the sale of the company. I think there is always, it's always important to keep in mind there's also different incentives in play, right? I mean, as a broker, you want to sell as fast as possible at the highest possible price, or maybe sometimes you're even, you know, inclined to just sell. Maybe there would be other buyers out there that you could extract a better price out. So there's probably a couple of things that you need to navigate, especially as a buyer. Yeah, you will encounter all sorts of different brokers, as you said, right?
Sure.
Some will provide excellent information at the start. Some will barely provide any information. Yeah, so this is a challenge that you are always faced with as a searcher. Yeah.
And to go back to the searches and the excellent program that the NCA provide, you know, could you give some of the searchers out there that may be interested in this some tips on, you know, what it is that you're looking for in a good searcher?
Yeah. So the typical profile that does very well in the program are people that have had operating experience, obviously, really P&L responsibility, leading people. And in most cases, our searchers have had entrepreneurial experiences in the past. They have started a business or they've been running a business on the side. I think this mix of experience does help a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
You need to be a self-starter in a way. It's a very lonely journey, even though you're supported by this entire team. But at the end of the day, it's you. You need to find a way to spend this up to 3 years that you're having and, you know, stay really focused. Be honest to yourself. What are the things that work? What are the things that don't work? Mm-hmm. And because this is a very lone experience, this is not, if you've, let's say you spend all your life in a corporate setting surrounded by people and always worked in a team, while teamwork is certainly very important, you need to be able to work autonomously just on your own and motivate yourself every single day to, you know, to go after the company.
I can imagine. So that's where that kind of entrepreneurial, if you have, you know, gone through the startup process, there was a kind of lonely journey at the start. So it's a mix of that and then also managing a large team and the corporate and the operating process.
For sure. You'll have a lot of stakeholders throughout the process, right? There's all these third-party providers, service providers. There is the sellers, there is the brokers, there are the investors, of course. And you need to be able to distinguish between them and the different, let's say, the different levels of information. And you just need to be able to adapt to your counterpart.
Okay, interesting. And, you know, we touched earlier on the kind of differences between the US and the EU. And I know that you kind of span both. I mean, is there anything else out there that you think really separates the two scenes? I know that the US is certainly more mature, but also in terms of, you know, sort of valuations and multiples and stuff, we seem to be getting better rates in the EU compared to the US because perhaps not as much competition.
Yeah, we see slightly lower multiples in the US market. Other than that, I think, of course, the model is super well known in the US, right? I think that helps to a degree that service providers, you can essentially skip all that educational aspect, right? Mm-hmm. And the amount of times I'm speaking to people that have never heard about the search fund model before, this takes up a lot of time as well. I think that makes it slightly easier perhaps in the US. But yes, it is a very competitive market. But the same thing is about to happen over here as well.
Well, yeah, that leads me on to my final question because, you know, we feel that we kind of sit at the brink of a wave of, you know, ETA. And I know it's really popular in sort of Southern Europe, but in the UK and it's starting to grow. And what do you see as the future of M&A, SMB M&A in the EU?
I think it's certainly very exciting. If you attend any ETA search fund conference at the leading schools, I mean, they're essentially growing exponentially.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of momentum in this space. Now, a lot of momentum means that there will be new searchers entering the scene, right? I mean, especially for MBAs, it's a very attractive proposition, right? If I understand the, let's say, the financial gain or financial upside, if this is done well, then it's certainly very attractive.
Sure.
Now, understanding the model doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right thing for you. So I think there is probably also a bit of a natural selection then of the searchers that will get funded, that will be able to raise their search fund successfully. And there will be others that won't manage, right, to raise sufficient search budget. And that is because, I mean, the investors, and there's also more and more investors that will be investing in search budget, they'll be able to compare, right? They'll get already now, they receive so much inbound interest from aspiring searchers And that the same goes for us, of course, in our assessment center process. But I'm now just speaking about, let's say, the traditional searcher profile. They'll be able to already select, you know, at a very early stage who they think has the right profile, who has what it takes after a simple conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But on the other hand, there's numbers out there about the potential, you know, targets that you can acquire, the number of companies changing hands or that are supposed to change hands. Mm-hmm. So these are gigantic numbers.
Yeah, sure.
If they are entirely accurate and all of these companies are good assets, a different question. Mm-hmm. But in principle, there is a lot of targets, good targets out there.
Yeah.
So I think there is definitely space for further expansion and more searches entering the scene. And then we will see, new types of models emerging. Yeah, you have you have self-funded, you have dual searchers, you have self-funded dual searchers. There's all types of, there's all types of ways you can go about it. And I think this will probably be, this will continue for sure.
Excellent. Well, Robin, thank you so much for joining us. And everybody at home, if you're interested in applying for the NCA program, please do so via their website. We'll include all the links below. Thank you very much, Robin.
My pleasure. Thanks. Thank you.